This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Lin Zhao was a poet and journalist in communist China under the reign of Mao Zedong. At first, she was attracted by the promise of real change and social progress under communism. Then she became disenchanted when she saw the way Mao had corrupted those principles. Lin Zhao stands as the only known Chinese citizen to have openly and steadily opposed Mao's regime. She was imprisoned and later executed for her dissidence. Her story was captured in a book by Duke Divinity Professor Xi Lian. The book is called Blood Letters, The Untold Story of Lin Zhao, a Martyr in Mao's China. Now, Lin Zhao's legacy lives on in a new musical composition. It's going to be performed for the first time at Duke University this Friday. Xi Lian is a professor of world Christianity at Duke's Divinity School and joins us now. Xi, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
When did you first become aware of, or had you always known the story of Lin Zhao?
I must admit, I came to the story relatively late in 2011. Quite by chance, I actually stumbled upon that story. Yeah, but once I heard about her story, I got the outline of her story, I was drawn in deeper and deeper into that.
Give us the outline, please. What is it?
Well, the outline is that this is a story of this young woman who maintained this incredibly brave kind of opposition, to open opposition to Mao's rule during the Cultural Revolution. But it has a very sort of ironic beginning, because as you mentioned earlier, she began as a sort of fervent supporter of Mao's revolution, only to become disillusioned with that in 1958 as a result of the anti-rightist campaign, which punished more than 1.2 million intellectuals. But instead of going silent, she decided to openly oppose Mao.
And this was, I mean, talk about this, because this is obviously a person who is deeply passionate. She wants change for China. Communism offers this promise, at least, when she sees how it's been corrupted and the ways in which people's rights are being trampled. She doesn't lose the passion, but she becomes an open critic. How did she do that? How was her criticism reflected? Did she begin by writing, and had she had a career as a poet and journalist up until then?
Yeah, you mentioned her passion, and that is one important part of her story. This is a passionate woman. We don't know too much about the earlier part, except that she believed passionately in the communist promise of making a just society. But she was trained as in this premier university in China at the Peking University, where she distinguished herself as a scholar of ancient literature and a journalist and a poet. She's very good in her poem.
Yeah, almost too good, because when she came to the attention of the regime by 1960, then she's thrown in jail, right?
That's right.
What happened to her? Because there were a lot of dissidents who were imprisoned or sent to camps or during the Cultural Revolution, re-education camps, in quotes. And many of them became re-educated and dutifully changed their opinion. She did not.
That's right. Because after 1958, most Chinese intellectuals went silent because there was just no hope of any meaningful opposition to change the way that Chinese society was being run. But she decided, and this is where her Christian faith came in, she decided that it's a matter of principle. As a Christian, and she called herself as a select soldier of Christ, she had to maintain this her political line of Christ, as she put it. So because of that principle, she had to stick with her dissent.
Now, communism in that period, famously atheistic. Was she ambivalent toward her religion when she was fervent and passionate about communism, or did she find a way to navigate both?
Well, when she secretly joined the Chinese Communist Party in the late 1940s, this was an era where it was not uncommon for patriotic young people to combine their Christian faith with a belief in communism. And the incompatibility only became clear several years into the communist revolution.
So when she's in prison, talk about these letters and poems that she wrote. Obviously, they're not anxious for her to get the word out, so she's not getting any kind of writing material.
That's right. The only kind of writing she was expected to do was to write her own confessions, but she refused to do that. And so when they took away her writing instruments, and when they tortured her and she was handcuffed, she resorted to the only kind of writing that was that she could do, which was with her own blood. And she chose the most ancient form of Chinese poetry, which is four character lines, to do her blood writings.
So what was she writing?
Well, she did all kinds of writings, mostly to protest against to denounce the communist revolution. She mocked Mao at this Chinese emperor in Marxian garb. And she denounced the cruelty of the revolution. She also wrote about her own regrets of having misplaced her hope in communism.
Interesting that she would use that ancient form, the hope that if it got out, and I'll ask you in a minute how it got out, but the idea that if it did get out, this would also sort of call people's mind back to that other China, the pre-communist China.
Yes, and in fact, particularly, I mean, she used all kinds of literary allusions in her poetry, and that helped her speak to the Chinese, particularly the intellectuals.
Now, did she? How did that stuff get out of there?
Yeah, I was really amazed at her this hope against hope that her writing would survive. I mean, she even told her mother in one of her last blood letters that she gave the title to her a future collection of her writings. She told her mother, "I want my writings to be called Freedom Writings." I was amazed at that because there was no chance whatsoever at the time that her writings would be preserved. And I think this is one of the ironies of this totalitarian regime, because the prison rules decree that the inmates' writings will have to be carefully preserved, regardless of the nature of the writing. And the system was so rigid that nobody had the initiative. Even when they recognized how damning those writings were, nobody wanted to take the political risk of disposing of her writings. So they were preserved.
But were they disseminated? They were preserved, but they were never disseminated while she was alive.
No, they were put into her file. But it's only after Mao died, in the early years of Deng Xiaoping's reform era, there was this nationwide effort to at political rehabilitation of those who have been wrongfully persecuted. And so during that period of political rehabilitation, the judge reviewed her file and decided that he was going to return the writings to her family.
Well, so then you come across them, you write your book, Blood Letters, The Untold Story of Lin Zhao, a Martyr in Mao's China, and then decide that it should become a musical performance. Talk about that transition.
Well, I was grateful to have this opportunity to write this book about her. But when the book was done, I realized that there has never been a musical piece written to commemorate her, to honor her. In fact, there has not been any public event to honor her in China. So I contacted my longtime friend, composer Lu Pei, who's teaching at the Shanghai Conservatory of Music, to float this idea of writing a piece to commemorate her. And at the same time, I turned to Professor Begbie to ask whether this would be something that would fly. And so I'm very happy that this happened.
Well, that would be Professor Jeremy Begbie, who is a professor of theology at Duke's Divinity School and who will perform the world premiere of the piece that we're talking about. Jeremy is going to perform on piano, accompanied by three members of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. He's also the director for Duke Initiatives in Theology and the Arts, which is sponsoring the performance. Jeremy, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So tell me what happens when you hear about this political figure, political religious figure, I guess, her blood letters, and somebody says, "Oh, let's write a song." What do you say?
Well, it sounds extraordinary, doesn't it? But no, I'm absolutely thrilled to be involved in this, and I found the book inspiring, yeah. Extremely inspiring. And when I heard that a piece was being written in honor of her, I said, "Well, this is great. Can we do this at Duke Divinity School? Can we give it its premiere?" And I have friends in the Boston Symphony Orchestra, all three of whom are Christians and have read the book and are very much behind what Chilean is doing in the book. And so we basically, I said to Lupe, would you be willing to write a piano quartet? And the result is indeed this piece, which arrived just before Christmas, and we've been practicing ever since.
Well, I want to listen to a clip from the piece now. This is part of the piano composition Elegy, based on the story of Lin Zhao, and just a taste of what people can hear on Friday. Let's listen. So there's a sample of the piano line from the new composition Elegy by Lu Pei, composition inspired by the life of Lin Zhao, a Chinese dissident in Mao's China. And you heard Duke Divinity Professor Jeremy Begbie on piano. Also with us is Shi Lian, who wrote the book, The Blood Letters, which is about Lin Zhao. Going to be a full performance of that piece Friday, 7 o'clock, Duke's Goodson Chapel in Durham. So Jeremy, describe for us how this composition works and how it does describe this extraordinary story.
Well, it has fascinating features. There's a big arch, really. The whole piece is constructed in a way that you start with mourning. Indeed, one of the opening themes is based on Adagio for Strings by Samuel Barber. It's a kind of variation on that. And it begins in a fair amount of darkness. And it works out a big conflict between faith and the forces of evil. So the music we've just heard, for instance, is very much the reflective, faithful side of Lin Zhao. Indeed, there's a fair amount of peace there, but only seconds later, there's music of considerable violence. And so this conflict has worked out. It reaches a huge climax, which really marks the death of Lin Zhao. And then the last five minutes or so, the atmosphere turns radiant, and we're looking there beyond death. We're looking at Lin Zhao at peace. So that's the basic structure of
And how do you approach a piece like this? So you get this composition. I mean, it's gone through many iterations. There was this extraordinary life and this tumultuous period in Chinese history. It's then reflected in a book, and now it becomes music. And now you're going to have to perform it. Talk about that and trying to reflect and interpret all of these layers.
Well, it's very passionate music. And although it's difficult to play, it's very obviously emotionally strong, and I think you play this kind of music like you really mean it, which we do, and try to communicate it very thoroughly to the audience. It has a number of fascinating techniques. For instance, right at the start, there's a 7 or 8 note theme, which is Lin Zhao's name turned into musical letters. So her name is, as it were, written into the piece, and that keeps coming back. So that acts as a kind of leitmotif through the whole thing. We want to bring that kind of thing out. And I think we want to create at the end an atmosphere of wonder, really, that such a person lived. Wonder at the strength of her faith. So I hope the audience will be really caught up in this. That's my great desire as I play and as I work with these incredible musicians as well.
I'd like to play another clip and we can talk a little bit about some of the other aspects of this composition. A sample of Elegy, a composition based on the story of Lin Zhao, a Chinese dissident in Mao's China, with Duke Divinity Professor Jeremy Begbie, you heard on the piano, author in the Duke Divinity School as well. Shi Lian is with me. You talked about the code embedded in this, right? Her name is throughout, and I think for someone who wrote in blood, sort of an ideal musical metaphor.
Very appropriate.
How Western is this music? How Chinese is this music? And how Chinese did it have to be? Or should it have been?
Well, Lupe, he studied in the United States. He studied composition here. So there's a lot of America in this music and a lot of the Western style. But as the first clip, I think, showed too, there are evocations of Chinese style and pentatonic scales and other things that we would naturally associate with Chinese music. So actually, you've got quite a mixture here. And he's very eclectic. He draws a number of things towards the end. For instance, he introduces a bit of Bach's Passacaglia in C minor, So he's drawing on not only Western Chinese traditions, but within Western music on a number of traditions. And that kind of eclecticism is much commoner these days than it used to be. And it makes it fascinating to play and fascinating to listen to.
Xi Lian, talk about her faith. We talk about faith in a system, faith that justice perhaps will prevail. How much of that is rooted in her, sort of doctrinal Christianity? How much of that did she write about? And how much of that was, how much of her writing was rooted in a faith for a better social order?
Well, one thing that really distinguished her from other Chinese intellectuals is that she was able to hold out at a time when it was so pointless, seemingly pointless. And that's where her Christian faith came in. I mean, for instance, she explained that I'm defending my share of God-given human rights. So that sense of this Christian duty is very important to her, because at the time, after the anti-rightist campaign, everybody went silent, it's apparent that neither secular liberalism nor the Confucian tradition of scholars remonstrating with the emperor, neither of those traditions was adequate to the task of keeping up this opposition. But to her, she always felt this divine presence in her fighting. So I think that's what made the difference.
You know, transcendence certainly is a theme in all of this, being able to transcend your immediate circumstances, having a faith in something that seems preposterous and certainly out of your own grasp, that kind of transcendence. And I suppose art is the other transcendent form that we can, sort of in a more secular way, relate to. Talk about the importance of this, Jeremy, because this is what you're doing, is trying to relate these, trying to find artistic renditions of these very difficult to describe and apprehend human experiences.
Yes, I think I've been exploring for many years now the links between the arts and faith generally, but music in particular, precisely because music finds it hard to be specific about things. It's hard to say, this is a table in music. And yet, it is profoundly meaningful to people. And I'm interested what that says to the life of faith, to the Christian faith as well. I'm interested in the particular powers of music, like harmony and rhythm and counterpoint and all things actually we find in this piece, and the way in which they create an atmosphere and evoke theological thought.
Theological or emotional? Why theological?
Both, yeah. I think. It depends on the context. I mean, the context here, of course, is of a martyr and the book and so on. So you're hearing these sounds in the midst of a context. And so they're very likely, given this woman's faith, very likely to evoke or provoke, let's just call them theological thoughts or convictions. But emotion goes with that. Emotion is not against theology, after all. So this is passionate music, but the passion ultimately is about the person of Christ. That's what she's on about.
Xi Lian, what is her legacy in China today? Can we talk openly? Is Lu Pei at any risk in writing this composition?
Well, I'll have Lupe answer that question. But in terms of her legacy today in China, she's such an important source of inspiration for those who continue this fight for democracy, for human rights. And of course, that makes the officials very nervous about that. Ever since 2008, there's been surveillance camera installed above her, near her tomb. And police have shown up dutifully every year on the anniversary of her execution, which is April 29th, to block access to her tomb.
No. So she's still dangerous?
She is very dangerous, yes.
Well, we could use some of that here. Xi Lian is an author of Blood Letters, The Untold Story of Lin Zhao, a Martyr in Maoist China, also a professor of world Christianity at Duke Divinity School. Jeremy Begbie, professor of theology at Duke Divinity School, going to be performing the piece Elegy on piano along with three members of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. He is also the director for Duke Initiatives in Theology and the Arts, which is sponsoring the performance of Elegy. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. It's going to be performed Friday, 7 o'clock, Duke University's Goodson Chapel in Durham. Just ahead, was it a suicide or a lynching? The death of Lennon Lacy, explored in a new documentary. We'll talk about it in a minute. Stay with us.